are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Awesome. Hey, Ilana, thanks for coming on to the show. Appreciate it today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Born in Russia. I was in Russia back in 82. You weren't even born.
Before I was born. That's before I was there.
So I think that in 82, their government still was like, I think they were just coming out of communism. And socialism was, you know, it was a big shock for me being an American and over there for the first time. I tell you what, after that trip, I thought everybody in America should go take a trip to some place like that. Not necessarily Russia, but that was a really huge wake-up call for me.
Tell me about it. I had the same experience, actually. Not obviously when I was born, because I don't remember that. But when I went back to Russia as an adult, I had likely the biggest culture shock of my life. And I have traveled all over the world and have never experienced what I experienced going to my own like home country of birth. Now, out of curiosity, what city were you in?
I'm going to say something pretty stupid right now. Moscow?
No, that's correct. That's not stupid.
Okay. I was in Moscow.
Yes, I had the same culture shock in Moscow. So I'm not from Moscow. I was born in St. Petersburg. But Moscow is the capital. And I visited both when I went back. This was years ago, but as an adult. Yeah. And when I went to Moscow, which is like a really, for those who haven't been, a really big, beautiful, loud, dirtier version of New York. Like it's like a huge city where everyone is busy and nobody has time for you and everything's gray and people don't smile, but it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's worth seeing, you know, but in terms of culturally, now having grown up in America, I remember I was on the subway and a guy came up to me and he says, "Hi, where are you from?" in Russian, right? Yeah. And of course I look at him and, you know, in Russian, I answer, "How do you know I'm not from here?" Yeah. And he says, "Well, you're smiling." It's just a fact. And so,
funny that you say that, because when I went there, we had some translators that were a lady actually working with us, you know, and she says, "You know, I can tell that you're American by just the way you walk." And I thought, that's interesting. I never, you know, it's like little things like that. We in America just don't. I mean, at that point, I was so damn clueless, you know.
And you best believe she meant it as an insult. It was not.
It was just so weird. And then, of course, you know, things like my my suitcases were being every night they were being gone through, and they told me it was going to happen. And you know, when I was talking, I was there with athletes. I was learning some training from the Olympic team. Russia obviously had a very good. One of the best, and I was there, but man, it was so weird. It's like, you know, don't talk over here. The athletes, I was with athletes, let's go over here. And I said, "Why do we have to go over there?" KGB. I'm like, "Oh my god, this is like a movie." I have to tell you something, to be quite honest with you, the people over there, for me, I thought they were wonderful. They really were. We were invited into their homes, and you know, there was so many things that were just, like you said, it's a cultural shock.
Yeah.
And then my last story before we head with your story is we had a Polaroid camera that, you know, the pictures they develop right in front of you, you know, which one
I'm talking about? Like in Clueless. Yeah.
Yeah. our cab driver, we took a photo with him and he didn't know what this was. We handed this to him, the picture, while it was developing, and it developed and it blew his mind. That guy, because I was in a small, the area that I was in, you saw the same people again. I saw the cab driver again. He had that photo with him. And I said, "Why is this so important that you guys carry this stuff around?" Mm-hmm. And they said, "Well, at this point, the only people that had photos were the ones that were dead and they had it on their headstone. But photos weren't something that was a common thing." I mean, how crazy is that?
Well, it was also the early 80s, right? So I don't know. I know that Russia would have definitely been behind. I don't know how far behind.
They said 50 years at that point, 30 to 50 years.
Nuts.
It is nuts. But anyway, but like you said, beautiful. The churches, I mean, 1,000 years old. Oh, my God.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. And in the subways, you have like castles, like you have, like you come out of, you're like, it's such a, at least when I was there, which was still several years ago, but it was such a mix of like the modern and very, very, very old, like beautiful cultural, historical city in that you're on the subway. It's a very modern thing. You come out and you see like a bajillion year old castle.
Yeah.
And it'll blow your mind. It's gorgeous, you know, but so.
I can totally relate. And, you know, to see something like that, you can't learn that in the history books. You have to see it to really appreciate that, right?
And I think that's true of every country and every culture. And, like, I think traveling is so important just for people, just to learn about other people, not even necessarily to see the sights and not even necessarily to learn the history, though you should, you know, try to learn that as well. But just to go out and just see how other people live.
Exactly.
Because, you know,
otherwise you live in a bubble.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell? I didn't know people lived over here and they did it this way.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So you were born in Russia, but then what took you to San Francisco? It seems like you went right to, how long were you in Russia before you went to San Francisco?
3 years. So I was three years old, 2.5. So I didn't have much say, you know, in the matter of being taken to San Francisco. That would be my mother. She just wanted to get out of Russia. You know, it was really, the economy was horrible there. Yeah. And so my family decided to immigrate, but everyone else was sort of too afraid. And my mom was the first one. And she said, I'm going no matter what to America. And she took me and my brother, who at the time was about 10 and I was 2.5, and she didn't speak English. And, you know, she had a PhD in music, which meant nothing in America, but everything in Russia. And then she was like, I'm going. And she went with us, and then later got my dad and then my aunt and uncle and my grandparents and everyone else, you know, came later. But
your mom was, your mom was very courageous. That's a
she's a shark.
Huge thing to do. You know that? I mean, that's pretty amazing. Not knowing the language, I think, and you know, how would I be able to do that if I came to Russia, for example? Because the time that I went, nobody spoke English over there. No one, no one at all. The translator, you know, I mean, without her, I mean, I did learn how to draw pictures pretty well. I carried a little pad around and I draw photos, you know?
Well, nowadays with the technology, you have those little like microphone things that translate automatically.
Yeah.
But it's useful to be able to speak the language or know someone who does.
Definitely. Know? Definitely. Okay. So at three, you're in San Francisco. Why did you pick San Francisco? Because of your music background or why? What
was No, because it's the best city in the world. Okay. San Francisco is amazing. I mean, I grew up there, so I'm somewhat biased, but I really believe San Francisco is one of the best cities.
It's a beautiful
in America.
City.
It's beautiful. And it's just where she wanted to go. And she, you know, sort of landed here, and then other family got dispersed throughout later on, but it was just, that was the goal. And that's where we ended up.
Talk about stating a goal. You know, in athletics, I always talk about in bodybuilding, you state the goal, you state the objective, and then you, that, you know, that's where it starts. And then you follow through, holding yourself accountable till it gets done. Right.
You do that in acting as well. And in any, I think, industry where you are kind of your own, I don't want to say your own boss, but when you're responsible to yourself, like your duties and your therefore success is going to be based on only you, because you don't have, you might have a team, you might have people helping you, but you don't answer to someone the way you would maybe in an office, or, you know, you don't have like a supervisor. And so you're really, you're just having to hold yourself accountable. And
And I talk about the correlation, because even though you're from a different background than I am, there's so many of the same things that we apply in each one of those backgrounds. So it's kind of similar that way, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And here's what cracks me up here. I'm looking at your bio as we're talking. So you performing throughout your entire life. You started at the age of 5. Okay,
hold on
a second. Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you're definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
When I was 5 years old, I was playing in dirt with tractors and army men. Okay, what the hell? How did this happen? Tell us.
Well, I was also playing with Barbies, right? It's not,
were you acting?
Tell us about that. I was five when I knew, when I first announced, you know, to my family that this is what I was going to do. And really? That I knew, I don't know how I knew it in my bones. I knew it from the bottom of my heart. I can't express to you how well I knew and how much I remember that. And I remember that feeling like forever, as far back as I can remember. But, you know, my parents say that when I was five was when I sort of declared it for the first time. And I said, you know, people always ask little girls, like, so what are you going to do when you grow up? Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be an actress. And they were like, oh, you know, today she's going to be an actress, tomorrow she's going to be a princess, and then she's going to be an astronaut. It's fine. You know, and then it sort of just didn't go away. Yeah. And so I did go to an acting school at the age of five. That was like my first.
You went to acting school at five.
Yeah. So I moved around schools a lot until about fourth grade. I want to say elementary school was like a big old blur because in Russia, one of the things that you may know, the discipline and the education is just top notch, which is why the athletes are so good, which is why everyone is so good. You know, Russian people just really believe in structure and education was sort of the same. So the education in Russia was really good. And in America, it was not as good. And so when my mom came here, she was sort of on this search to find the right type of education, you know, for me. And she put me in school really early and I went. And so I think I got transferred to like 20 different schools before she settled on this French school that, you know, I sort of stayed in this private school. And amongst them, one of them I remember was a performing arts school. It was like an acting school, which she took me out very quickly, but it was enough for me to know that this is exactly what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And so I said, and I, you know, and I remember, and I sort of declared that, and then I just kept on saying it, you know, and I was like, no, really, this is really what I'm going to do when I grow up. And, you know, they kept trying to say, no, honey, you're going to be a doctor.
Yeah. Doctor or lawyer in America. That's interesting. You know, I really find that amazing. But, you know, one of the things that is, again, is very common in people who are very successful is, because I watch a lot of people. I like to watch and listen to people who are successful and, you know, what their sort of their journey was. And it seems like passion is always there. They had passion for what they did. No matter what the obstacles were, didn't matter. Doesn't matter if I was five and I was declaring it, didn't matter. But you had that. You had that in you, that passion.
You know? It's a gift and a curse, huh?
Well, it is. It's always like that. There's always another side on the sword, you know?
Yeah.
But you definitely had that.
First of all, I just want to say I'm really flattered because it sounds like you're grouping me into those that you deem successful and passionate. So thank you for that.
Well, and you are, my goodness. You know, there's different levels of success, and you definitely have had that already.
Thank you so much. But yeah, passion is something that, you know, I was listening one time to this, this person speaking on NPR, and I don't remember her name, but she was talking about how people are in one of two camps, and in either one, they can be very successful, but they either have a passion or they have a series of interests. And so, and like you said, it's a double-edged sword of both, because if you have a passion, like I did, in a way you're lucky because you don't waste time trying to figure out what you want to do. So you can get straight to it. But in a way, you're kind of cursed because it means that if you don't do it, then, or if you can't do it, or you don't make it or whatever, then you're just kind of stuck because you can't actually be happy doing anything else. Yeah. And that's how I felt. I felt like it's either this or bust. Like, yeah. There's no way that I could ever be happy doing anything else. Yeah. And if you have interests, you can be extremely talented. You can be fantastic at them, but they sort of will take you on this route and you can follow them. You can go from one thing to another. And if this doesn't work, you go do that. And you might be good at all of them, you know? And so that's also has its, you know, pros and cons. So yeah.
There's different ways to get to I've found that in my past, it's like what I thought and how I was going to get to a spot where I stated a goal. When I look back, it was like, okay, you know, I didn't go down the road that I thought, but I got to the same point, but I took all these other little roads, if you want to call them that, to get there. It wasn't like I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And the thing about what I think with that is I think if you have that drive, look, you might not make it like what you thought you were, but unless you just give up, you figure out another way.
Yeah, exactly.
At least I think so. You know, you just don't give up. Okay, so when you were 12 years old, you were recognized. And why don't you tell us about, this is now when you're in middle school.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. How were you recognized?
So I went to this French school, right? The Lycée Français La Pérouse in San Francisco. It's a private school. Great education, really tiny school. You know, not a lot of sort of big public school opportunities like school plays and, you know, things of the sort that other kids might have done. But there was this regional festival. It was citywide and they would travel to every city. And they would do these, I guess, not really plays. You would compete in this like festival. And so you could do a monologue or you would do like a little, you know, a scene or a skit as a class. And so all the schools in the city would compete to win, you know, this thing. And it was like a big honor in the French cultural world because, you know, they knew these judges and they were like very important in France and whatnot. But so all the French schools in the city would compete and they would go and travel to each city. So when they came to our city, I remember we had like theater class in school, you know, or drama class, whatever it is. And the teacher one day said, okay, we're going to be in this, you know, this festival is coming up and I need someone to do a monologue because I really think that we'll have a good, you know, chance of winning with this. And so that meant, of course, being by yourself on a stage and, you know, not with everyone. And so everybody was like super shy. And I thought about it. I didn't say right away. I didn't raise my hand. I didn't anything. He said it. And then I remember in like, I don't know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, he goes, and that person is going to be Alana.
Oh.
And I was like, what?
Any volunteers? Thinking, you,
yeah,
Alana.
He absolutely volunteered me. Yeah. And so I had no say in the matter. And then he says, and then I remember I came to talk to him after school and I said, why me? And he said, because I want to win. And then he was like,
he saw something
clear. Yeah, he was like, I want to win and you're going to give us the best chance at that.
No pressure.
And I was like, okay. And so, you know, I was sort of the weird kid who loved to be on stage in that, you know, a lot of like kids are naturally shy, like they're supposed to be. I was not. I was like, all the attention, I want all the cameras, I want the spotlight, I want it all. So I was really excited by this. But I wasn't like super popular in middle school, you know what I mean? And so I didn't expect to have like everyone kind of backing me. I was like, oh God, now I'm going to be like the girl who gets chosen for, you know, the drama thing. And I'm going to be, this is going to be terrible for my social life, but whatever, I want to do it. So I'm going to do it. So I did it. And before they announced the winner, before I won, at the end, I remember everyone, my whole class and all the schools, by the way, like the other schools in the city, they all started cheering like crazy when I finished. Like everyone, you could hear like the walls were shaking. And I was like, I don't get it, but I'm like the loser. Like I'm not popular. Why is everyone like cheering? Yeah, I didn't understand it at all. But I guess now looking back as an adult, I'm thinking I probably did a good job. And they were just, you know, like genuinely impressed and wanted our school to win. And, you know, that was it. It was just, it had nothing to do with, I guess, who was cool and who wasn't.
It was based on your performance.
Yeah, I guess so. It really is just how hard you work.
Then
I won. And I got the, like the title or whatever for the school and the prize. And then I was like, I came home with that thing and I was like, Mom, I'm going to Hollywood. Like,
solidified it right here. This is proof that I'm going to be an actress. Hey, the monologue that you did, Was it very long, and did you have to study for it for a while? Was it? It wasn't impromptu, was it?
It wasn't what?
Impromptu, like you just didn't get a monologue, right? Did you have some? Was it very long?
It was. It was a few pages.
What was it about? What were you talking to the people about?
What was it about? It was about, it was like a metaphor. I don't remember the details, but I remember that it was a metaphor about a lamb who needs to choose a path and is faced with two paths in life. And so, of course, it says it's about a lamb, but it's not really about a lamb, as everything is. Right. And the lamb needs to choose a path, and there are two paths to go. And it's sort of, I think now, and I thought then about how people need to choose a path in life, and sometimes they're faced with two choices and they get stuck. So it was about this crossroads that the lamb faced, and that's all I remember.
Well, that's fine, but the fact that you got that applause and that recognition from your peers,
right?
Yeah. I mean, that tells me, look, anyone, because I've heard people say, well, how hard can acting be? You're just reading words. But I can tell you it's way harder than meets the eye. And I know that from an audition that I did back when. And that audition definitely told me I do not want to be an actor, because it's harder than it looks. So you took
something. You know what I wish?
What?
I wish that for every, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I've heard that, oh, it's easy. What do you do? Just memorize some words.
Yeah.
So if I had a magical like power, if I could, what I would do is every single time someone said that, I would instantly transport them to an audition LA, in Hollywood, and put a camera on them and be like, go. And I just want to see. Some people would probably do great, you know, and some people probably wouldn't, but I would just love to see it. I would love to pay money for that.
I wasn't that person that said, how hard can this be? But I thought, how hard can this be? I only had like 10 words that I had to say. Oh, come on, man.
And the people, the better they are at it, the easier they make it look.
Oh, God. The minute that the lady came into the little room there, you know, whoever she was, did you study your line? Yes. And she said, okay, are you ready? Yes. And action. I just choked. I mean, I said, wait, let me do it again. It was worse the second time, you know? So there's a lot.
They don't always let you do it again. It sounds like you had a really nice casting director. Usually it's one shot.
Yeah, I tell you what, that was really something. You know, it, like anything else, there's always more than meets the eye. And anybody who does, and especially I think, well, this athlete's the same way. Anytime you see an actor or an athlete do something that's difficult and they make it look easy, those guys are real, and ladies are real pros. And we, on average people, don't understand that.
No. And I think it's a lot easier to see, to at least understand how difficult something is when it's physical. Yeah. You know, like gymnastics. I did gymnastics for years growing up. And I think like with gymnastics, there's a lot of things that, you know, a pro will make it look really easy, but you sort of understand in the back of your mind that like, doing a triple backflip is probably not that easy, even though they make it look easy. But you're not gonna be like, oh, how hard can it be? Let me go throw one. Yeah. You know? So, cause there's a fear of like landing on your face.
Yeah.
But when it comes to just like, you know, saying some words, well, that really is how hard can it be? And so that, and that's, it's sort of like the extreme of the better you are, the easier it looks. And then anyone thinking like,
amazing. Yeah. So you really did something there. You just didn't read words. You had something that obviously connected with the people. You were authentic and they felt that. And that's a true testament to that, even at 12 years of age. So, okay, so you did that and then you go into high school and obviously acting is following you now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what happens now when you get into high school? Tell us a little bit about how this is all turning out for you.
It was still the same in that I didn't pursue acting professionally until after college, until after grad school. In grad school, I started sort of working, but it was always just like studying and classes and all that. So I would go after school, take acting classes. It was just like a thing I did forever. And then when I went to college, so I went to UC Davis. And when I got to grad school, which I did a little bit early because I sort of made a deal when I graduated high school that I would move to LA and, you know, to pursue my career. And I said to my family, like, what do you need from me for that to happen? Because I'm going to go. And they were like, PhD. And I was like, well, hold on. That might be a little bit old there. Let's do like bachelor's, like no master's. I'm like, okay, fine, master's degree. And so I did, so I just kind of finished early so that I could go. So I finished, I got my bachelor's when I was 20 and then I went straight to grad school and then I got my master's at 22. And then I, you know, I paid for the grad school by doing a TA ship. So I taught public speaking to the undergrads, who are older than me, by the way. And then I got my master's degree. I handed it to my mom and I moved to LA to pursue acting. I did start working a little bit when I was in grad school. I got an agent in San Francisco and I started to do like some of those, you know, really, really indie, like 2 cent movies. I got something under my belt and I was still studying at ACT. And then I moved to LA.
Your mom gave you an option to state the goal. You know, she said, here's what I want. This is a stated goal. And you responded just like she probably knew you were. You're driven. It's like it's all over you.
Yeah, they really tried to talk me out of it. It was really like in a Russian Jewish family, it is like a disaster. If you say, I want to go be an actress in Hollywood, I'm going to move to LA. That's equivalent to saying like, you know, I'm going to go be a prostitute or a drug addict.
Are you that person that like with me, when somebody tells me, or if it's, you know, like what you're saying, they're really trying to talk me out of this. I get like really stubborn. It's like, well, wait a minute. I'm going to show you now. You just did something that you probably shouldn't have done if you wanted me really not to follow my dream in acting. It's like, okay, that's fine. Secretly, I'm going to show you now.
I think it was more the fact that like they let me take classes. Yeah. And so because I was always training and, you know, my family was thinking like, oh, this is a nice hobby. Like, you know, you can do this after school. But what they didn't know is like with each class, I was like, oh, for sure, I'm going to do this. Like now I really know. Now I got to taste it. Like, can't take it away now.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think you're, you know, some parents, like my dad's parents, for example, I'm Portuguese and our, you know, so there's a certain way in our culture. We're in the dairy
thing. Yeah.
Right. We are in the dairy business and it goes from one generation to the next. And that's just the way it goes. Sports. Are you kidding me? That was my grandfather with my dad. So you were lucky because my dad let me play because his dad wouldn't let him play sports, you know, because I asked him one day. And you're actually lucky that your parents let you go to acting classes to begin with.
Right. So, I am lucky. I'm really lucky.
And they could have shut you down. I mean, you know, it would, and you know, not that that would have been the best
thing. Something inside, I feel like I would have found a way to do it anyway, but the training helped. Like when I first got to LA, the fact that I had training under my belt, I think really gave me, you know, at least a leg to stand on because I didn't have credits, you know, and nobody cared who I was or, you know, why I moved there. So that was like the only thing that I was like, but I have this.
I want to ask you about your, you got a master's. What did you get a master's in?
Communication
makes sense.
And then
and so when you went to grad school, that was what were you doing there now again?
So trying to finish so that I could move to LA is what I was really doing.
But it's in the communication.
Yes. And so I taught, so they had, it's called a TA ship, a teaching assistant position where you could teach the classes to the undergrads, to the people getting their studying for their bachelor's, in order to pay for your master's degree.
Okay.
And so the school would cover. And so I did that so that I could, you know, pay for it myself and go. And I taught public speaking and I actually loved that. It was like a whole performance in and of itself.
Practicing your craft right there.
Right, yeah. And I was teaching the undergrads, but you know, they were older than me because I was 20 when I started grad school. And seniors in college are like 22, 23. And at that age, they were like, what is she doing teaching the class? Like, this makes no sense.
Well, and I was gonna ask you, how did that make you feel being younger than them? And you know, you probably thought what they were just thinking, what is she doing here? She's 20 teaching me.
Well, no, they said it out loud. It wasn't, I didn't have to think. It was written
clear as
day on their faces. Oh. Like I would walk into the class and they would expect me to sit down, you know, at the desk with the other students, and I would walk to the front of the room and everyone would just look at each other like, what?
You'd be kidding me. What's this kid doing up here teaching me?
But then they loved my class. So I made it super fun. I probably did some things I shouldn't have done. In terms of like, I took a lot of freedom and license with the way that I taught because I wanted to make it fun and I wanted And I wanted the students to do well. And I thought, well, the only way they're going to remember this information is if it's exciting and it's fun. And so I came up with a lot of like projects, and I did these like performances. I mean, I did a lot of things that would probably now, if looking back, have gotten me fired if people had known, but yeah, my students did really well. It's all that matters.
Bottom line is the result. Well, let me ask you this. The, were there people in that class? It would seem like there wouldn't be this question I'm about to ask you. Were there anybody there that were afraid to be up in front of people public speaking?
I would say 95% of the class. This was the norm, by the way. The rule, or they gave us a syllabus when we started to teach the class. And one of the first lectures I remember was explaining to people just how common it is to have stage fright or fear of public speaking. Public speaking is like, I think, number two as like the top fears in the world after death, maybe. Yeah. And it's like
going to really a dentist. High up there. Yeah, yeah. Like you're right.
So it's people flying. Are terrified. That's the norm. People like me who are really comfortable, we are the weird ones. The normal people get scared. Normal people don't like to have a bunch of eyeballs on them. And normal people get like sweaty palms and they start shaking and all of that is normal.
No, that's like, amazing. That's amazing. I wouldn't think it would be 95% of the people.
It was really high. It was really high. Hi. So
I was terrified. I was the 95%. I mean, I knew the only reason I was able to get up in front of people is because when I decided to leave the family dairy, which is poo-poo, I shouldn't have done that. I was like a rebel. And
shame
on you. I know. And I got into this business that I'm in. To start a business, I had to promote it. And in order for me to promote it, I had to get up in front of people at that point. There was no social media.
And I know.
Oh my God. But you know something? The motivation was stronger than the obstacle because I had passion for what I was doing. And my question to you is, how do you get somebody in a class, they're coming to this class for you that you're going to teach them, how do you teach them to get over that fear? I mean, you can make it fun and all this stuff, but when it comes, okay, now it's your turn to get up here and let all the eyeballs be. How do you get people past that?
So again, there was a syllabus. There were things I had to teach. There was like the four C's of clarity and blah, 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 whatever. There were rules, but the main one was confidence. And the main thing of that was, at least what we taught them, was just you fake it till you make it. Yeah. And it was really like, you're going to be scared and you got to do it anyway. Yeah. And you just don't show that to people. And then eventually, you know, I think the psychology of the human mind is so amazing in that you start to believe, at least this is how I act, like always, you just start to believe whatever it is that you're doing. And so, you know, much like acting, much like life, much like, you know, everything, when you do something, you start to live it. And that's why sometimes they say, if you're really sad and you're in a bad mood, you just get in front of the mirror and you smile, even if you don't want to, and you just smile and suddenly you feel better. It's sort of the same kind of thing. And I think that, you know, I would tell them, like, you're going to be scared. You're going to do it anyway. And when you get there and you start doing it and you project this confidence, whether or not you feel it, you know, you act like, I'm okay, I got this. Eventually you start to feel like, you know what, this isn't so bad. And the truth of the matter is, when it comes to a class of people doing public speaking, everyone is so nervous about their own speech. No one's even listening to you. So
that's funny. That's really funny. You know, one of the things that I found that helped with me, of course, it's not going to kill you, most likely, you know, but it sure does feel like it. But one of the things that helped me get through that, because it was brutal, that and flying, it was just like, those are both like number one on my list. I mean, the one wasn't worse than the other. They're both horrifying as far as I was concerned. The first time I got up in front of a class, it was in high school. And in that class, we had to teach somebody how to do something, even if it was just like for seconds, you know, so my thing that I picked is I taught somebody how to unwrap gum and chew it. And that was like horrifying for me. This is how you chew gum. Oh my God. It was unbelievable. I mean, I dropped classes going to college. I would drop a class if there was oral presentation. I couldn't do it.
Well, that's most of them.
Awful, you know, but now I'm in my own business. I thought, oh, well, now I have to, but
you're great at it.
And here's what I learned is that I did better when I knew my material. See, I knew my material. You know what I mean? I knew what I was talking about. It was just,
that's actually one of the rules. That's actually one of the rules in public speaking. With, I don't remember what it was called, but it was how well you know the material. And they would say, if you're nervous, focus on the material, not on your nerves. And we do the same thing in acting. We say, we'd say it differently. We say, defend your character. So it's not about you, it's about them. And so then you're so focused on what your character wants that you're just gone. Your nerves have no place there.
Right.
Your ego has no place there. Yeah. And it's the same thing, you know, when you're doing any type of presentation in any field. If you care about the material and you're there to transfer the knowledge of what you're saying from your mouth to the listener's ears, you don't have any space left in your mind to your nerves.
That is true.
You're focused on something else.
And that's something I learned. And here's another thing I learned, and this has to do now with bodybuilding, because in our sport, there was a part of the presentation you had to do like a minute and a half of a choreographed routine to music, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, repetition is the mother of skill. I've told the story before, and I had this thing down. I mean, I trained over and over for that minute and a half to go out there, right? Right before I go on, I forgot totally my routine. I just blanked as I was going onto the stage. I'm like, oh my, I still remember that. But you know something? I had so much repetition, and I knew my, I did really know my routine so well that I did that posing routine. After the event, people said, you were so good. I don't remember a damn thing. And it was so fast, but I was able to do that because I had that, I had the reps underneath me. So what I guess what I'm saying is that it was about knowing my information and having reps. The game was already won or lost before I ever went on stage, I guess.
For sure. And it was your muscle memory just took over.
And once that happened, you build confidence. It's like, I got this.
Well, because you did it once, you could do it again, right?
Yeah.
And then another time.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that as an actress now, do you have those kinds of moments? It's like you're getting ready to audition, or you're doing a part, and you blank. And how do you handle that?
I haven't really had like a complete blank moment, though. I have nightmares about it all the time. That's like they say the actor's nightmare, where you go out on stage and you just don't know. Yeah. You like never saw your lines. Yeah. So you're like, what do I do? Yeah. I haven't. Maybe in the beginning it was more, I never really struggled so much with the memorization, because that I kind of got lucky where that came pretty naturally to me. And then I just do that more and more, but I never, the way that I like fix that is that I never memorize. Like I don't sit there with a paper and like memorize. I read it and I try to understand what's going on in the scene. And then once you know that, and once you've done it X number of times, and you know, you understand like how a format of a script works, then you're like, okay, if you've read the script and you know what's going on and you know the format of a script, then you're just, at that point, you're just talking, you know. Then if someone asks you a question and you've read the answer to it, you know the answer to it. So you're going to open your mouth, it's going to come out, you know. And sometimes I don't trust, like I don't know that it's going to come out, or I'm like, oh, do I know the lines? Do I not know the lines? But I open my mouth and they come out, you know? So I'm like, so somehow something inside me knows. And and with practice, you start to trust that a little bit. But I remember I was in an acting class once, and the teacher said, you know, a lot of people think they struggle with memorization. And he was like, why don't we do an exercise just so you guys can see? Everyone's going to read the script once, and then I'm going to take it away and just go up there and just talk.
Yeah.
And I think he said the result was that people knew, without thinking that they do, about 80% on average, 80% of the material, without any special abilities, without thinking that they knew it, but when they were forced to and they opened their mouths, they still somehow knew 80%, which is a lot.
That is.
You know, and that means that if you have practice and if you have training, you're going to know 100%. Yeah. You know, and so that I just think it's a matter of, like you said, it's repetition, it's trusting. It's like, and I won't go to an audition without ever having read the script. You know more than you think you do.
Yeah, that's true. And you just you have to learn how to trust that. And even in my sport, what happens is, and this happens to kids in school, we get the intuition beaten out of us as far as learning how to trust your intuition.
Yeah.
And the same thing in my sport, it's intuitive. You have to trust that when your body's saying, you know, today you shouldn't be doing this exercise. And yet it's so trained that we usually break that rule more often than not. And sometimes that's what gets us in trouble, right?
It's like my coach, my acting coach, Joe Kelly, who, by the way, is like the best in the world, in my opinion. She says, and she's always said this, and it always stuck with me. She says, your instinct, and she kind of points to her abdomen, and she's like, it's in there. She goes, it's mega smart. So yeah. She says, you can never, no matter how smart you are, you can never outsmart your instinct. You cannot, and you shouldn't try. So when you're acting, you have to just trust your instinct and not try to think about every little thing, because you can't do better than what's already there. You can't. Yeah.
And that's so hard. Yeah. That's so hard. Mega smart. That's so hard to really trust. But when it happens to you, then it's like, you know what? I'm still scared in some ways, but I trust it. And it is magic. And I'm going to tell you something with me and bodybuilding. I want to go on to your next part in your newsroom and your HBO part. But I want to tell you the one of the best feelings that I had as a bodybuilder, because, you know, we're competing on stage, obviously non-verbally, and trying to show our best sides of what we're doing.
But you guys work so hard to get there, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Like that little moment on stage, but it's then insane.
For a minute and a half
or whatever, you're
right. Exactly.
Your macros and lifting a bajillion pounds and it's
crazy. But the moment where I had I said, the game slows down. Maybe you can understand that, because when you first do something that you're not used to doing and you're afraid and all those feelings, everything goes by fast. Like my first show, I went by. I really didn't even enjoy it, to tell you the truth, because I don't remember it. But when I got to the point where the game slowed down, when I went out on stage is when I really had the best time of my life in my career, because I could actually interact with the people, and it was slow. And it was like they got more enjoyment out of it because I wasn't going through my poses so darn fast. My delivery was such that they enjoyed it as much as I did. And I loved it.
I bet you were having fun yourself.
I had a ball. That was the best time right there. When the game slows down, I think that same thing happens as an actor, right? Isn't that similar? Yeah.
Well, when you rush through something, oftentimes it's because you're nervous and you just want to get it over with.
Yeah.
You know, and when you, it's not so much about slowing down the pace, but when you're just living in the moment,
right,
and so the pace doesn't matter.
Right. That's what I mean.
Then if you're having fun, they're having fun.
Oh, you know, yeah. That's when you really hook them.
They're going to enjoy watching
you. That's when you really hook your audience, for sure. Yeah. So tell me about the newsroom. I used to watch that. The newsroom and the HBO part of your career right now.
Okay. So this was earlier on. So it was the end of the newsroom. Like the newsroom was ending on HBO. It was the last season. And it was like right before the last episode, maybe the second to last. And I booked the newsroom, and I remember I was so excited because Aaron Sorkin is just like such a talent. And I thought, wow, I'm going to get to work with this person, you know, like so early on in my career. And that was really exciting. It was just a fantastic show. I think it was a little too esoteric. So it went off the air afterwards, because I think not everyone like got it. But it lasted 3 seasons, and HBO is just, I think, one of the best networks in terms of their content. Like their content is so top notch. And I was so lucky that I got to work at HBO again later on, because then I came back for Veep. And then
again,
they had me, it was a great show. And then they had me pinned for Big Little Lies. I didn't get it, but I was pinned. So that's like second place. So I had a lot of good runs with HBO in my career, and I'm just so grateful to them because they're awesome.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Okay, so then you went from HBO, then you're Brooklyn Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Fox. Yeah.
Okay. So is that where you're at right now?
No. So okay. That was season two. A little bit of that. It was like towards the end. I think it was actually the finale of season two. So then that was Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And then, you know, a few other shows since then. I've been on Chicago PD and MacGyver. And the most, I'm probably forgetting some, but then most recently I worked on WandaVision, which just came out on Disney Plus, and that's like a Marvel show. And you know, the Marvel fans are just the best. Yeah. And so they really take their stuff seriously. And I play Wanda's mother, Irina Maximoff, on the show. And so that, that just was really awesome. It was just like, they're great to work for. And then, you know, Disney and Marvel obviously work together. And so now, hasn't come out yet, but Jungle Cruise is a Disney movie that's going to come out probably in the next month or two, starring The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and Emily Blunt. And I play one of his sort of love interests in the movie before he meets Emily Blunt's character. And so that's
where you're at right now. What would you say would be, because I know like with me, sometimes I get asked which one was better. And a lot of times my response is like, it wasn't necessarily better. It was different. But, you know, is there one of these the shows that you've been on? Is there something that stands out as far as like, which one?
Yeah, actually my favorite project that I worked on, it was actually an independent film called Nowhere Girl. And I starred in that, and it was like a low budget, you know, indie film, but I just had a little piece of my heart. Like, it was such a beautiful story, and I really, really loved working on it. So that would have been my favorite.
So would you say that it was your favorite, not only for the reasons that you're talking about, but is it because you starred in it as opposed to maybe a supporting
role? Yeah, that helps. That helps.
Kind of like something like, this is mine. I got this.
It's mine.
I don't know. I'm asking the question.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But it sounds so self-centered that I can't say that. But I wasn't the only star. I was like the third lead. It had fantastic leads like Josh Robert Thompson and Jennifer Aspen did an amazing job.
Yeah.
But yeah, that also helped. And you're more invested, you know, when you sort of own more of it in that, in your performance, you're more invested. So that, and then I also starred in more recently an independent pilot called Tijuana. And I play Carmen, and that I was really like actually the star of that. And that also made it very personal for me. And I really loved working on that project too. So
let me ask you this in sports. I had a mentor, he's now gone, but he told me this as an athlete, and I'm going to bring it back to you. But he said, look, when you're on the field, you have people that are competing for your position. I played quarterback.
Yeah.
And he said, when you step onto the field and inside those lines, those people are not your friends. They're trying to take your position away from you.
Wow.
This is how he put it for me. He said, now, so you get into that mindset. It's you or them. You're going to win the position. It's very cutthroat like that. Now, when you get off the field, you can socialize and be their friends. But when you go back onto that field, for me, that really helped me, because over the years I had some stiff competition. And if I didn't have that mindset in my background. So now going back to you, you're in a very, I would assume, a very competitive environment.
The most competitive,
probably,
I would say. Right. Yeah.
Arguably, yes. And I'm asking you, is it pretty cutthroat? How do you handle that when somebody else is trying to get your part?
Well,
do you poison them?
No, I haven't done that yet, but I'll keep that in mind for the future. Yeah. I think it's so competitive that when it comes to acting, and specifically acting like in film and television in Hollywood, I'm not talking about the rest of the world, you know, but like in that arena that we have today, the market in and of itself is competitive. It is defined by being competitive. So if you are not okay with that, you can't go into the field, because that every single part of it is competitive, and you literally have to compete for every single job you get or don't get, you know? So that's on one side of it. So you just know that it's competitive, and you don't even like focus on that, because it just is. You can't avoid that. There's no option. No one's going to just hand you a job. I mean, maybe at some point, like when you're Brad Pitt, and so yes, they'll call you and say, do you want this job? Yeah. Hopefully I get there, you know, for the A-listers. But in the meantime, I have to audition for every job. And then getting the audition is sometimes harder than getting the job. So it's really it's always competitive on every level. And everyone's always out to get something you have, and you're always out to get something someone else. I mean, it goes on forever.
Yeah.
But I will say, in the same coin, right? There's every like metal has two sides.
Right.
In the same vein, that on one side, yes, it is so competitive. On the other side, I will say that you almost don't have to compete because it's so competitive. You almost just know there will always be someone better. There will always be someone worse. There will always be someone more ripe for it, maybe, or less ripe for it. There will always be someone taller or, you know, more like someone that the producer loves, or there's always going to be something.
Yep.
And so you're so like, I'm like, so what kind of, it's like, so what, so am I going to quit acting because right. Meryl Streep won another Oscar? Yes. She's incredible. So, you know, like it's okay. It's okay if there's someone better. It's okay if there's someone worse. You just do you. And it's really, and the good thing about acting is that it's so tailored to being unique and being yourself that it's like, you know, I remember a class one time from Michael Kostroff, who's a great actor. And he said, and he teaches this thing called the audition psychology, I believe it is. And he said, when it comes to auditions, you can't be afraid of like not getting the part because you're probably not going to get it. But he's like, but you look at it as pretend you're selling paint samples. And I'll always remember this. And he said, you sell paint samples and let's say you're selling yellow. And the guy next to you is selling purple. Now, if the buyer wants to buy purple, there's no way that your yellow is going to do the trick because they just want to buy purple.
Right.
You know, but now if you have your paint samples and you have yellow and tomorrow somebody wants to buy yellow, well then the guy who's selling purple isn't going to make the sale because they want yellow.
Right.
So it's really sometimes so I really think your job is to just defend your character and do the best job that you can and be as involved in what you're doing as you can and do you and not worry about what anyone else is doing. And then if they like you best, great. And if they don't, well, great. You left it all out on the floor, you know,
let the chips fall where they may, you know? And the thing about it is what you're saying is the right way to look at it. But as a competitive athlete, I take that stuff so personal. You know, in bodybuilding, you don't make the top three. Oh my, you know,
it sucks.
Not
everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to win, but it could be that, you know, you didn't win today and you're going to win tomorrow. And yes.
You have to get to that point. Otherwise it'll eat you alive. That is for sure. You know? So I think you're really smart looking at it that way, is I guess what I'm trying to say. As we're wrapping this up, where do we go from here now with your career? How does it go for you? What do you think?
Well, I hope that, you know, soon I get a series regular and then a lead role in a movie and then I win an Oscar and then I'll talk to you again. But those are all hopes. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen right now. You know, it's in between, like pilot season is over, episodic season is around the corner. So also the pandemic totally screwed with our industry. We got shut down for a long time.
Yeah.
But most recently, WandaVision just came out. So there's, you know, some buzz from that. And then Jungle Cruise is coming out soon. So I'm happy to have worked on some great projects recently. And hopefully there's a lot more to come around the corner.
I think there is. And I'm going to say something, and this is meant to be a compliment. I think you have your mom's drive and determination. I really do. And I don't know your mom, but I kind of, it almost feels like I do in a way.
Yeah.
And you have a lovely spirit about you, and I think that you're gonna achieve what you're setting out to do. It's, you know, it might not, it's obviously it's never going to be a straight line, but it never was meant to be. And if you can't deal with that, then you better go find something else to do, right?
I agree. And I love your attitude, and I just like, I, you know, if for anyone who's training in your sport, I think they're really lucky to be working with you. And like,
thank you,
that, because it sounds like you're just so motivational. And I think that's so important.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Listen, I hope you'll come back another time.
I will.
And tell us something that's going on with your, I'm really interested in your career. So please come back when you have something to say, reach out to us. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Nice having you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.